This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the BristolCon Fringe reading series.
So I just want to finish off by asking a few questions of our readers tonight, and you folks can participate as well. We should start with Ken. Ken, you said that was your first ever reading, and Airship Shaped is your first publication. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right, yeah.
Well, I'm really impressed with that. You're doing very well. Have you got any plans for writing anything else at all?
Well, I do have a couple of things on the go. One story I've already accepted for an anthology by Richard Freeman based around Fortean phenomena, which is a story called No Race Like Gnomes, which is centred around reports that turn up in Fortean times in various places of sightings of gnomes racing cars at very great speeds around parks. It sounds comic enough, it is a comical image, but I tried to turn it into something like an EC Comics or Amicus film story of nasty retribution on a nasty person, and that's out fairly soon, hopefully, sometime early this year.
Well, that sounds absolutely wonderful. I'm certainly looking forward to reading that at some point. Now, Jonathan, I had a look at your website in preparation for you coming here, and it looks like you enter an awful lot of literary competitions and things. Do you put the science fiction stuff in there?
Yeah, the magical realism, come on. What's the right answer? I guess so. I'd probably for the sort of big competitions, the Bristol Prize and that sort of thing, we tend to sort of put in the less, more literary style stuff and less science fiction ones, I guess. But certainly Bristol is very open to sci-fi type stuff. If you look at the anthology, there's all sorts of stuff in there.
It certainly is, yes, and we're very pleased to have our friends from the Festival of Literature who we work very closely with, which it's one of the good things I think about BristolCon is that we are embedded in the local community and we get involved in other things rather than just being a science fiction convention that doesn't have any contact with that. So, now, having done the Mrs. Darcy and the Aliens, have you got any plans to write any other science fiction novels?
If Mrs. Darcy and the Aliens actually finishes with Mrs. Darcy Will Return in that sort of James Bond style, except my publishers weren't that interested in the idea, so might happen one of these days, but maybe not. It depends what ideas come along. I'll try anything. I mean, my next book is actually a non-fiction book. Completely different, nothing to do with science fiction, nothing to do with literature at all.
Well, I did notice you own a software company, so it might be something I'm interested in.
I'm not writing more software books. I did write a software book back in 1997 called Professional Decom Application Development. It's very, very good. I still don't know. It'll become a cult classic one of these days.
There are probably people out there who are still maintaining programs written in that.
No, Decom didn't even get enough traction to be worth maintaining. My next book, can I talk about my next book?
Sure.
Yeah, my next book is actually, it's the story of my search for an obscure reggae singer called Dennis Pinnock, who is real, he exists, and he's actually not a sort of case study in failure in some ways, in that he made about 20-odd records, all on sort of different labels, and never quite made it to the mainstream, and I never quite sort of broke through. But he's always bubbling under, and he's actually really, really good. Some of his records are terrible, some of his records are great. And I thought, it'd be really interesting to try and track this guy down. How do you go about tracking down someone who was last heard of in the 80s and sort of has disappeared off the face of the earth ever since? And also, what was he doing with my surname? And thereby hangs a tale which goes back to slavery and all sorts of stuff like that. So it opened up a whole sort of weird, sort of multidisciplinary book, and that's coming out sometime later on this year.
Well, do let me know when it comes out, because when it is out, you can come on Ujima Radio and tell us all about it.
I would love to.
Perfect. What serendipity. And moving on to other things. Snorri, one of the central themes of your book is the conflict between the old religion of the Norse people and the new religion of the White Christ, which is being introduced by King Olav of Norway. I've been reading Nicola Griffith's Hild, which is a very similar sort of thing, except it's set in Anglo-Saxon Britain with similar stuff between the old Saxon religion, which is pretty much the same as the Norse, and the missionaries coming in from Rome. Now, one of the key parts of Nicola's book is the economic advantages that the Saxon kings were getting from aligning themselves with Roman Christianity, and particularly Roman Christianity as opposed to Celtic Christianity, which they were getting from Ireland. What was the situation in Scandinavia? Do they have connections with Rome at all?
First of all, the Vikings went all over the shop. One of my favorite things about the Vikings is that they sacked Constantinople from behind. Conjure up the geography in your mind. That's tricky to do. But they found a 5th century little model Buddha in one of the Viking hordes that they dug up. And that's, you know, that thing has traveled for a distance. And they used to come down the trade routes and trade for sharp swords from the sword makers in the east and so on. So there's no way they haven't sort of been aware of the whole Christianity thing. I think Viking chiefs basically slapped it on, like we were talking about, Jody. Basically, they had a ready-made structure where they with all kinds of nifty things like built-in guilt and so on and so forth. And you must do this and that. All the commandments and that. What do you mean? I can't knock my neighbour on the head and take his stuff? What's all this? And so on and so forth. So it's a very handy tool for oppression of masses, as well.
Yeah, I should just mention that Snorri's been deep in conversation with a young lady who's doing research into Viking history and whatever.
I used to. I have a day job now.
Please explain, Jody.
My background many years ago is I used to, my master's is in the Vikings in the Anglo-Saxon world, basically. And I still read books occasionally. In fact, I have the leisure to read books about it now. When I feel like it, because I have a day job instead of an academic job.
And Snorri's got the thumbs up on the historical accuracy. Oh dear, now I was going to ask you another question. It's come completely out of my mind while I was talking about the history of the stuff. Are there any questions from the audience while I try and remember what I was going to ask?
Just for the record, I am hugely excited about Johnny Vegas liking your book.
Yeah, I am too. I'm waiting to hear what he
This is the point where I admit that I have no idea who Johnny Vegas is.
He's not the only one.
Johnny Vegas?
Yeah.
How do you describe it? He's a force of nature. He's a comedian, an actor. And actually, I said to my wife, Johnny Vegas is following me on Twitter. And I said, Johnny Vegas, he was the one in... Bleak House, wasn't it?
Yes.
She was in Bleak House. Yeah. He's a crook. He's excellent.
Yeah, very good comedy series called Happiness as well, a few years back. Very good comedy series a few years back called Happiness, and it's probably best known for being the voice of PG Tips for the stuffed monkey these days.
Yes.
That's Johnny Vegas. That's
I haven't read any of your books, but I've been very amused and interested to hear you read from them. You said... your books deal with some of the conflict between the incoming white Christianity religion and the excellent Viking Nordic religion. So, I mean, what interests you about that conflict? And do you see any parallels with the changing face of religion today?
I think there's always... I can manage without it. but this does sound very official. I think at the time where my book is set, which is bang on the last millennium, you're sort of at the very height of the Viking era. And it's just when Europe is properly flipping over into Christianity as well. And the Vikings are just about to develop over into being organized mercenary bands rather than just roving opportunistic farmers who were getting tired of beating each other up, to be honest. And I think there's always these sort of flashpoints where ideas and ideologies meet. And I think we might very well be in one of our very own right now, where we're sort of, where Nietzsche's finally done killing God and we're all communicating instantly with everyone on the planet, and there's industrial revolution, and we're sort of a little bit confused about morality, and no one quite knows what, and we maybe haven't seen what rises out of that, or maybe something is rising out of that, but we're just too close to see it. So I can only assume that in about 1140 years' time, another man with a beard will go, or a woman with a beard, who knows, will go, the smartphones are good men, there you go.
So, there's a theory in pagan circles that the belief in gods is important, that if people stop believing in gods, then the gods fade away into significance, and if more people start to believe in a god, then that god begins to come back. Now, I've remarked here before that currently we have more people worshipping Thor and Loki than possibly there has ever been in the history of the world. And I'm wondering if you think perhaps Norse religion might make a comeback.
Well, we do have our Hollywood blockbusters to back us up and so on. Ásatrú, the belief in the Æsir, is actually an officially recognised religion in Iceland, and I've got lots of friends who are who believe in that stuff, and they're really cool about it, and they just go about their ways and so on. But you know, it's that incidentally is the plot of Terry Pratchett's Small Gods, isn't it? Where all of a sudden this one god starts getting followers, and that just spirals out of control, and before you know it, everyone has a strange hat. No, I think there's a need to put something in a god place, and if it isn't sort of conveniently organized pantheon of invisible friends, it's science, or it's the Daily Mail for some people, or whatever. It's that need is there, and we just keep substituting and swapping things in, I think.
Jonathan, you want to comment on science and gods?
Great. I'll have a think about that one. Come on.
Where's Paul Cornell when you need him, my darling? Peter, you had a question.
Yeah, I've noticed your reading was very lively, very well presented. Is that practice just for reading, or is that practice taken out from role plays or LARPs?
Probably time to own up. I have something of an unfair advantage in that department because I relocated here in the vain belief that I would become a professional actor. So I'm a trained actor, and after that didn't work out because there weren't that many roles for Icelandic man. I then decided to sort of make my own fortune on the stand-up comedy circuit and did 400 of those. So when it comes to talking in front of people, I am at a slight advantage when it comes to writing poems in bloody reverse Fibonacci. Come on! What is that? You know. So we all have our strengths and weaknesses, and I am now going to go and write inverse Pythagoras things on my face.
I've remembered the other question I was going to ask Snorri, that we all have our strengths and weaknesses, and one of my strengths is I have an awful lot of friends in Finland who are doubtless going to listen into this podcast with great interest to find another Nordic writer. Now, I haven't finished Snorri's book, but I do know that the pagan forces are being led by a witch. And naturally, having spent a lot of time in Finland, it occurred to me that the witch was probably Finnish, but I thought I'd better check with Snorri.
And there is a mysterious woman in my book who comes just from the north, and the Norse were kind of okay with the idea of the north being a pretty weird place, because basically they didn't go much further north than Trondheim, which is sort of on is that latitude on the sideways stripe with Iceland roughly, because once you go further north than that, it just things become weird, the animals become weird, you can't it freezes and so on and so forth as it's coming out, you know, you're breaking it off and using it as a weapon. It's just everything's very difficult, and there's a whole lot of land that way. So the idea of the mysterious wizards often from the north was alive in old Norse culture, because they figured anyone who lives up there is either nuts or magical. And so sort of I will there's a likelihood that the sorceress in my book is from Finland. I, to be honest, I wouldn't want to be in a room with her long enough to find out.
Oh, the Finns are lovely.
The Finns are bonkers.
There is a drinking game in Finland Okay, no word of a lie. Everyone, yeah, I know, everyone brings a bottle of vodka to a party. Then you go into the living room and you sit under the table. Everyone. And everyone puts a bottle of vodka, their bottle of vodka, on the table. Then, sitting under the table, you drink the vodka. When the vodka is finished, one person leaves. And the others have to guess who left. In Finland, they say, you can also play this game with two people. Then you need a lot more vodka.
It is actually, it's a good Kimi Räikkönen accent.
Thank you, I like the diverse.
Dear, yes. Well, I'm going to be in trouble when I go back to Finland. Are there any more questions from the audience? Well, in that case, so I don't get myself into any deeper trouble, I'd just like to say thank you very much to Ken for first ever reading at very short notice. Thank you. Yes. Thank you also to Jonathan and to Snorri. Yeah. Well done, folks.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.